You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Ready and welcome to The Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm really fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be a really interesting one. So on this week's show, we are going to be talking with Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching, and we're going to be talking about how to get the most out of your people, which is a really, really important topic for any business owner that employs staff. This is The Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Gemma after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're joined by Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching, and we're going to be talking about how to get the very most out of your people. So let's start. For those who don't know Gemma, you absolutely should. So Gemma, welcome. Please, can you introduce you and your business? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for inviting me on, Ben. So my name is Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching, and I work with business owners and their teams effectively to help them get the most out of their people. So glad we're going to be covering that in more detail later on. I work from small business up to big corporates, and ultimately we work with finding what really makes their teams tick. I love getting closer to business owners about finding out how they really want to run their business, what it means to them. So getting under the bonnet of the business, finding out what the goals are and making sure that everyone's aligned to those goals. So that's pretty much what I do.
Amazing, amazing. And I look really forward to talking more about that over the next hour. But before that, the only non-business related question is to choose a song on the radio. I find that all of our guests feel pressure here, and I always build it up. But what are you going to pick as the radio DJ, and why have you picked it?
I mean, I literally had five on my list and I had to whittle them down. So I have picked Titanium by David Guetta, largely because I became a massive fan of the darts over Christmas. And so that was great. But I also think it's a great motivational tune.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you aren't just tuning in, we have Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching, and we're going to be talking about how to get the most out of your people. So Gemma, let's just start with a really big question, if that's okay, which I'm sure is impossible to answer with one answer, but let's just set the tone. How do you get the most out of your people?
Yeah, so anyone who knows me or has worked with me, I talk a lot about the ingredients to what makes a great team. And I think firstly, and this is going to sound like I'm getting really into the detail, but you've got to start with the basics. Mm. You've got to really understand if the team trust each other. Mm. Because if you don't have trust, if you don't have that openness, then actually everything else that you're trying to build, no matter whether you're trying to scale, whether you're trying to just get more out of what you've got, if there isn't a level of trust within a team, which has lots of different ingredients to it, then you can't build anything on top of that.
Mm. That's a really good place to start in terms of the trust. Where I think it's quite common, isn't it, to hear employees say that the boss doesn't trust me. But I sense from the word ingredients, it's not just about the boss trusting the team trusting the boss, and between peers. How do you really identify whether there is trust in the team, and what do you do if there isn't?
Yeah. So I am a big fan of the trust equation. If anyone hasn't seen it, go and look it up. They talk about what can build the trust. And I think this is where it's a really good conversation starter. This is a really good opportunity to understand what makes and breaks trust in a team, because you and I, Ben, might have very different interpretations of what trust means. So understanding, first of all, what a good trusting environment may look like. We talk a lot about psychological safety now in business. And so how do you create that environment? So some of it might be about credibility. It might be about demonstrating you're an authority on a topic. That might build trust in some respect. Big one for me, this is a personal thing, reliability. People that can count on each other, not just when something goes wrong, but they all know who does what in the team and can trust that somebody's going to show up. And then there's this part of the trust equation which refers to intimacy. That doesn't mean going around hugging everybody, unless that's your culture. But it does look at actually how well do you know that person? How well do you really understand? Some people are really happy to talk about their personal lives and share quite openly with their teams, but other people will be much more guarded around blurring the lines between personal and professional. But even just understanding what motivates people can build that connection. So if you think about those as ingredients to trust, sometimes as leaders of teams, we can get very focused on the reliability. We may even get really focused on the credibility part of our job. But actually taking the time to really know what makes our team tick, and also that connection point. We're always so busy bouncing from meeting to meeting. How do we spend the time to really be interested in what makes our team actually show up for work every day?
That's a really interesting piece, isn't it, in terms of the ingredients? Because I think that it's widely reported we spend a big percentage of our lives at work. And the recruiter, it took me 2 minutes to bring recruitment into it. But actually, there's been so many studies to say that if you've got a good friend at work, your longevity, I think as many as double, in one of the later studies I was reading, is going to increase so much. And but similarly to that, so regularly you see people leaving work because they don't feel part of the team. They feel alienated. What can you do to create an environment where it is inclusive? What can you do to in create an environment where all of your team do feel that they can show up and be themselves, but at the same time be on brand? How does that equation work?
Big shift. We used to talk a lot about bringing your whole self to work. Well, actually, that's I've seen in more recent kind of communications around inclusivity, psychological safety. It's actually about bringing your whole professional self to work, which I think comes down to another part of that trusting piece is feeling respected, feeling that your value and your contribution is really respected and valued by those around you. So I think, for me, your role as a leader is to create the right environment to foster that. And a lot of that isn't about what you do or say, although I am a big fan of communication, which I'll come on to later. I think it's really important you role model behaviors, sharing where you're possible, sharing vulnerabilities if possible. But also, I think it's about listening. And listening is one of the so underestimated skills. Even when I was kind of qualifying to be a coach, I thought I was a pretty good listener. I thought I was quite good at absorbing information. We need to practice the art of listening a lot more. And if leaders just really listen to what was going on in the business and listen to what people were actually saying, then they might actually find that some of the things that they're assuming are working or assuming are doing the right thing might be having counterproductive outcomes as well.
It's a really interesting point about that assumption, because I think that it's really easy to assume that your team want the same as you. And I don't mind giving a really great example, as for those who follow me on LinkedIn and listen to this radio show, I've got the aspiration to retire in when this goes out, I'm not sure exactly when, but 23rd of May 2035. And actually, off the back of that, as a team, we looked at our employee benefits because we really wanted to lead from the front and do a much better job. And the big thing that was top of my list is we've got to increase pension. We've got to have a really good pension. And actually, whilst yes, that's my vision, it's not necessarily my team's vision. And I think that for me, I see myself as a good, in inverted commas, leader, or certainly somebody who wants to be a good leader. And I think it's very easy to presume that your team want the same as you, isn't it?
Oh,
What
completely.
are some of the techniques that you can do to make it a safe space to really get those authentic answers from your team, so you really understand, I guess, understand what is important to them, and really give the platform to be able to listen? Does that make sense, what I'm trying to ask there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, lots of opportunities around engagement, surveys and questionnaires and town hall meetings, all of those things are really, really good. but they tend to be the initiative of maybe the HR person or even the business owner itself. And actually, you've got to create it as a space where there's not going to be any judgment or critique. What I do tend to find is that people in the leadership positions will almost go out with a questionnaire that they're asking all the questions that they almost want to know the answer to, as opposed to making a very broad kind of engagement piece. So some of the research you were referring to is some of the great questions we can ask are actually like, have you got a best friend at work? And it throws some of the business owners off because it's like, well, what's that got to do with whether or not we pay more into their pension? But I think if you really want to know what matters, you have to have a much broader question. So I would always seek a bit more guidance if you're going out with those. If it's your first time doing any engagement questionnaires or surveys, I would definitely get some professional kind of advice or support about that. I think the second thing for me is a really simple thing that I get people to do is running stop, start, continue meetings on a regular basis. So if I'm working with a business and we're going to be talking about their culture, or we're trying to define their culture, or we're trying to really get the business aligned, maybe it's because they're going on a bit of a growth journey, maybe there's lots of change going on, then a stop, start, continue exercise can be really simple. And it just sort of almost depersonalizes some of the things that the business are doing. So simply put, get groups of the team or get the team all together, depending on the size, in a room, and we start talking about, okay, what are the things that we need to stop doing that add no value to the business? And those things can be quite easy to come across. And also, you've got to make it very clear that there is no nothing silly in this, right? It can be like, I don't know, stopping buying the milk on a Monday because why don't we just get it delivered? It can be as ridiculous as that. If we then get into the stuff that we really need to continue doing, the stuff that protects the business from what it is, what are the things that we need to do? So it might be once a month, we always have a social, and that protects who we are. Maybe it's about how we also deal with our customers in a certain way, how we communicate to them. Whatever it might be, you get a broad range of feedback within that. And then the things that you can start doing are things that, or maybe never really get on the to-do list. And that can be really powerful. And what I have seen come out of those exercises done on a regular basis means that there's this continuous improvement, continuous review of what we're doing and what's working. But ultimately, people in the teams feel more engaged and feel like they have more influence over what the business is doing.
What a good exercise. And there's an ongoing joke on this radio show that our listeners must have their notepad. And I really hope you listening at home, you're making your notes. So that's a good one. Let's have a song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
This is the Business Brunch podcast from Get Radio, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, definitely go back and listen back. It's such a fascinating conversation that we're having today. We're talking all about how to get the most out of your people. And to do that, we're joined by Gemma Cubitt of Avenue Coaching. So definitely go and head over to Gemma's website and have a look at all the great stuff there. Gemma, I'm really keen to ask a two-part question here and start, but let's start with the really small part. So somebody's listening to this show, they've left corporate life, they've set up by themselves. Let's say they're an IFA. Let's pick on that. Let's pick on your former corporate life. They're setting up as an IFA, they don't have a team, they want to start building the team. To use the house analogy, how do you put those foundations in? Because currently you've got yourself. What, how do you get those foundations in to ensure that as you build, you're going to have a actually plan team with really good foundations to be able to build the bricks and the floors and the roof. Continue that analogy.
This is juicy. Partly because I'm really envious of any business that is starting from that point, because you get to create the business you want, how you want to run it. It can feel totally overwhelming. So the first thing is surround yourself with people that you trust, but also you value their opinion. Don't try and do this on your own in those early days. So whether it's like us, we have our networking group that we can go to, whether it's maybe you have a business mentor, maybe it's an old manager or leader that you really respect in terms of how they've done it. I would say the first things first is get your kind of own team right. Who's on your metaphorical board, if you like, of who you're going to ask for help from, bounce ideas off of. I think that's the first thing, particularly in those early days. Then I think it's really about coming back to that real why question. Because what I refer to as the accidental business owner, I was a master of my craft. I think I'm brilliant at what I do. My clients love me. I'm ticking all the boxes. And then I go and set up a business and suddenly it doesn't feel quite as easy. Right. And it's that classic kind of individual contributor leading into running a business or running a team. They are different skill sets. So my real advice in that space is to think about actually not just what you're doing, because we assume that you've got that kind of nailed. How are you going to do it? Why are you doing it? Why should people want to follow you? Why should people want to join it? And I'm sure you find that the best kind of candidate requests that come in your way when people are seeking a role is people who really get to connect in with why the business exists, the culture that they're trying to create, so that you can really work on their behalf to sell that business in. So I would start in that space. And then the building blocks for me are kind of all of the other stuff that sit around it, whether it's operations, whether it's your trusted team around you, such as your accountant, your solicitor. You kind of get those people in line, but definitely starting and spending some time on your why so you can really articulate it with conviction.
Absolutely. It's a really interesting point you make there, isn't it? I think that, as you said, about what I feel, do you know what? The hardest recruits that we ever do, ever, is where the business leader doesn't have a defined aspiration.
Yeah.
The easiest ones is where there's a really defined aspiration. Because actually, if you can say to a candidate, this is the vision for the business, this is where they want to get to, this is how your role fits into it and how it's going to develop, it makes recruitment easy. It really, really does. Yeah. So now let's go flip side. I promised a two-part question and let's go big. So big business with challenges, a big business who, for the purpose of this fictional conversation, let's focus on, they're making some redundancies, and as part of that, redundancies need to hire again or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But how do you focus on a big business where there are cracks or where there are challenges within the team? How do you fix something that's not quite working?
Yeah, well, actually, there's two parts to this, I think, in your two-part question. So the first thing is communication. I said this earlier when we were talking. There's definitely a real part of listening, and you know, particularly when there's a lot of change and lots of stuff going on and unsettled kind of feeling in the team, listening's really important. But also, what I refer to when we're talking about communication is be consistently boring, right? And what I mean by that is do not allow the team to fill the void. So when there's lots of change, doesn't matter whether it's big change or just lots of it happening. We're in so many different change curves in business at the moment. It's really overwhelming to a lot of people. And then you throw into the mix that some people are so resistant to change as well. But actually, we've got to listen, but we've also got to be really clear on the intent of our communication, and also that we repeat the messages until we've got more to share, so that that void isn't created and people just fill it with noise or hearsay. I always talk about intent, and I use intent in quite a lot of different ways when I talk to my clients, but intent in communication is what do you want those people to feel, think, or do as a result of hearing you? Whether I'm standing up doing a keynote presentation, whether I'm in a one-to-one coaching session, whether I'm facilitating a big workshop, I always focus on what do I want to leave that person in that room thinking, feeling, or doing as a result? And I think the other part of that as well is change. If there's lots of unsettled kind of feeling, is do not be tempted to try and either minimize or to rush people through the emotions of change. It's a tendency of a business owner or leader to want to fix it, to want to minimize it, to kind of almost be too optimistic, trying to pitch in that it's all going to be fine, everyone's going to be all right. But actually, you've got to allow people the opportunity to almost grieve and to let go of the norm that they're used to. Because rushing them through it is only just going to mean that they'll probably revert a lot quicker. They've got to come to terms with whatever is happening. And the big thing for me would be is just allowing them to sit in that space, whether it's listening, whether it's coaching, whether it's adding structure in, whatever that person needs, sitting in that space and not trying to rush them too quickly is really important.
No, absolutely. And just focusing on that piece, I think a real buzzword is resilience. If I were to put my recruitment hat on, five times now we've got a tally chart. If I were to put my recruitment hat on six, and were to look at like the buzzword, I think a big thing is resilience. And actually, I think that there's so many great people who do a huge amount of work around burnout, and we know that we can't be resilient forever. But how do you manage resilience during a big period of change? Because we all know that life happens and business happens, and there will always be points within small businesses and big businesses where some of the team need to take on what's more than that than you would like for a short period of time. So how do you manage that short term? But then how do you set the strategy to ensure that it's realistic and sustainable long term?
So the first thing, I wish somebody had sat down 20-year-old me and really explained to me what resilience means. Because I think there's almost a little bit of an impression, and I've been doing sessions with groups of big businesses over the last week or so where they're going through redundancies and they're going through change. And we talk about resilience, and everyone who I've asked when I say, how would you define it? It's almost like grinding it out regardless, persevering, being tough. Actually, resilience is the opportunity to really adapt in those changing circumstances. And so that means it could be really positive change, but it's the ability to be ready to adapt, to maneuver around those circumstances. But a big part of resilience is also knowing what support and help you might need along the way. So using your resources. And we never talk about that really enough when we talk about resilience. We talk about how to be mentally fit and strong and your well-being and managing stress and burnout is a big thing at the moment. But actually, we also need to talk about the emotional journey of how difficult sometimes it is for people to ask for help or to even know what help they need. And so I try and make sure that we balance both parts of it. There's a big mindset piece. So actually, it is about role modeling that optimism, especially as a leader, in a sense of being open, adapting to change, that growth mindset of what could this bring? What could opportunities could this land? There's also about having, like I say, the resources. So whether that's your network, whether that's your just simply knowing who to go to for asking for help. It may even be somebody who's more expert or experienced in a particular area, so calling upon their support. And I think also about action. So it's one thing having all of that, but you've got to make sure you follow through. It comes back to, again, knowing what my goals are, knowing why I'm doing this, and keeping that in the heart of whatever action you choose to take and following through on that. People who are more resilient tend to demonstrate more of those skills, more of those attributes. And so actually, as leaders, our best way of doing that is also investing in ourselves in that, knowing when to take a break, knowing when to ask for help, and knowing when you don't have all the answers and that you need to call upon the wider group in your network.
And just in terms of that support network piece, I think I'm really keen in the next section actually to talk about the support network for business owners. And I'm sure you're going to have some great insight to add there. But I guess in terms of that support network for the team, how do you create a safe team environment where everybody feels they can be their authentic self and that the team are getting that support network that they feel that they need? And I appreciate it'd be very different within a, I don't know, a Tesco's than it would it within a Thompson and Terry. But how do you do that?
Well, actually, it's really funny because I work with big businesses and I work with small businesses, teams of four or five people. And I would say we always look at these big businesses thinking, God, they've got it all nailed. They've got it all sorted. And a lot of the time we don't, because in those types of environments, sometimes we don't pause enough to understand what the values might be of an organization. It's almost something that goes up on a poster, or you know, you have it at your annual conference, but it's not something that's really felt and understood. Whereas in some of the smaller businesses, it's how they show it, it's their DNA. So it's almost more visible, more tangible to them because it's a smaller team. But the big thing for me in terms of creating those right environments for this is I think you've got to think about the team itself. How are they going to really want to communicate? How are they going to really want to share? And one of the things around psychological safety is about no judgment, no repercussions. So what you've got to really demonstrate is that the act of somebody speaking out constructively, keep up there, and professionally, is that if somebody's speaking up, is that that is rewarded and recognized as a positive part. So I was talking about trust as one of those real foundational building blocks. Being able to deal with productive conflict and differences of opinion and being able to work through that is a really lovely way to make people feel like, you know what, I have a voice, it's valued. And as long as I'm being professional and constructive and I feel like my intent of what I'm trying to do is positive, then that should be received with a business wanting to listen, wanting to really effectively kind of listen and put into play what people are really speaking up. Unfortunately, what I tend to see, because trying to find good people in business, in smaller businesses, I can see that sometimes the cultural piece actually goes the other way, and we almost over-nurture teams. We insulate them from that conflict. We almost see it as a negative thing. And so it might feel on the face of it a safe environment, but actually some of that innovation, some of that kind of openness of communication is only surface level because we haven't allowed people to really open up in a true way.
No, really, really interesting insight there. Thank you so much. Let's have another song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch Podcast, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Build relationships with the ultimate goal of growing your business. obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, you've missed a good first two thirds of the show. So do make sure that you listen back. Today, I'm really, really excited to be joined by Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching. And we're talking about how to get the most out of your people. Gemma, I think the bit that I'm really keen to bring in now is personality profiling or profiling as a whole, because I know that's something that you do a great job of with a lot of your clients. And actually, I know that in the team structure, it's a great way to understand the personalities and ways of working of your people. But can you do a much better job than me of explaining what a personality profile is and where you should and where indeed where you shouldn't potentially use them?
Yeah. There are so many out on the market, and it's quite hard, I think, for people to understand which one's the best ones, which ones to pick, which ones are backed by kind of psychological kind of associations. The first thing I would say is, why are you trying to do personality profiling? So I get teams, businesses approach me and say, we want to run an insights workshop. Insights is one of the profiles which is based on the colours, and that's one that I tend to use most frequently. And my first question back is, what's the purpose of it? What are you hoping to get out of it? A lot of the time it can be seen as a bit of a jolly and getting people off site and something different and throwing it in the midst of a team meeting. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if it's just one of those things where people do the reports and it goes in the drawer and it gets forgotten about, we've lost most of the impact that these reports can have. So I always refer to the personality profiles, whatever one you pick, you are essentially starting a bit of a language in your team. And it does definitely depersonalize some of the kind of feedback or intimacy parts that we're trying to find out about what makes people tick. So for example, using insights, it's very much looking at colors. And so it sort of almost says, like, it looks at preferences and it looks at communication styles. Suddenly a team that might not have had those types of conversation or even been dissecting that in any way might unlock some of those challenges they've had about communicating or driving things forward. So it can be a really great tool to depersonalize some of that. It's a really great tool to unblock some of those challenges. It can be fantastic in when there's lots of change going on, bringing the team together, galvanizing them about their strengths, maybe their blind spots, and really getting people to reflect on it. So if the report's being used to drive a bit more self-awareness and also about getting the teams to adapt, happy days. Those are great reasons to do it. Where I see it being used sometimes, and I have seen this, is we put people in boxes. And insights, for example, is a great one where, you know, somebody might refer to somebody being a red or a yellow. And the truth is, we have all of the colours. It's just how we're choosing to use them. You know, I used to be predominantly red, yellow. And then over my career, my yellow has kind of taken over. But for a lot of my career, I was kind of put in there, well, you're a red. You're being very red at the moment. Okay. And I think where it happens is, for example, in the recruitment process, is some people almost are going, well, I want to find somebody who's going to fit in the team. So we need to have someone the same colour profile as us. Or we're missing a bit of that. We'll look for somebody who's got that. I think I would get concerned about that because, as we all know, we've got learned habits and behaviours that have helped us adapt throughout our careers. And a profile report, a snapshot in time that looks at that, ignores a lot of that, I think, habits and learnings that we've taken. Certainly, I would hope that the manager of Gemma Cubitt a few years ago is quite different now. So I think this is the part for me, is people really need to take it at face value, but explore it and use it as a kind of tool to explore some of those areas.
Something that I would probably add to that is I think as part of recruitment processes, and I think big businesses and small, I think personality profiling, and I agree with you, Insights is a great profile to use. I think where it's really good is when a business works for somebody like you and really understands where it fits into the team. I think where I don't think I've ever seen it work is where somebody buys a personality profile online, does it, there's no human interaction, and just gets a report and says, oh, there's something negative there, I don't want to hire them, or, oh, actually there's something positive there, I want to hire them. And I think that goes actually right back to a point you made really early in this. It's about actually having that trusted network around you, isn't it, of really good people. I'm going to get off my soap spot now. Right. So now I really want to talk about that support network to business leaders. I think that one of the things I see so regularly, particularly within small businesses, is that within the corporate world, in inverted commas, you often would have a boss ahead of you 99 times out of 100, and you would have that support network. But I think one of the things we see a lot within small businesses is you have owner-managed businesses who, going back to the word resilience, have the pressure of the team beneath them, have to use a very old-fashioned word quite regularly, which I absolutely hate this phrase, but we're going to use it for the purpose of this, a stiff upper lip, the burden of the business on them. So I'm really keen for you to share really about what it would be like to work with a coach, because I think a lot of our listeners haven't, and really where you should or indeed shouldn't work with a coach or a mentor or a consultant, because I appreciate they're three very different things, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. So I would say that, let's start in the mental space, because that's something that's been massive for me since starting my business, is, like I said before, having somebody that's actually been there, trodden that path, maybe not in a same industry or same way, but having somebody that you will benefit from their experience and their advice and their sounding board, really important in that kind of first part of it. So finding people that you can share those experiences, and also, why reinvent it, right? If people have gone through it and done it, use the benefit of that. I think sometimes we can be a bit too proud in those circumstances. I think then this part is around this coach piece. Doesn't have to be a professional coach in an external kind of sense, but it has to be somebody that has a coaching style that they are hoping. The difference between a mentor and a coach: a mentor has the ability to give you the advice based on their experience. A coach may actually not be in your industry or know what you're doing, but will use questioning and listening skills to draw out the answers for you to make you get to the place where you want to go. And I think a lot of the time in the coaching spaces, it's all about movement forward. It's assuming that you're ready to take that first step. And so you can use a coach in lots of different ways. And this is one of the things I always talk about when I do my first chemistry call with a potential client, is working out whether both of us are the right fit. And there have been a number of cases where it's just not the right time, or maybe I'm not the right person for that individual. And in that, we talk about, you know, are you looking for an accountability buddy? Are you looking for somebody who's going to connect you into different things? Are you looking for somebody that's just going to be a safe space and a sounding board? Are you looking for somebody that's going to really, really kind of hold a mirror up? What is it you're looking for from a coach? And some people come and say, I don't know. I just know that I think it would be a good thing. It would be something that I need to invest in myself. And I think the first thing to think about is, you know, how do I need my coach to show up for me? Don't underestimate the power of being in a space where somebody is just listening to you. I have some people that rock up going, I haven't got an agenda, or I don't know what I was going to talk to you about today. And I'm like, I can guarantee we're going to fill this hour. Just being open to the conversation. So the power of giving people headspace and time is huge. So that can be really powerful for somebody, even if you don't really know how you want your coach to turn up. But for me, I really enjoy walking alongside my clients and really listening to what it is that drives them, what motivates them, what really scares them. You know, revealing those weaknesses and those flaws and being able to kind of feel not judged by any of that. But ultimately, really kind of in some ways holding a mirror up on the positive and on the constructive side. Sometimes we are our own worst critic. The way that we talk to ourselves is really negative. And sometimes we need to hear that actually that narrative is not really helping me. Maybe that's part of the blocker too. So a coaching session working alongside me can open up various different conversations. And also it can evolve as well. In the early days, it might be very much that sounding board. And then it might be actually holding you to account and working alongside you and your team and holding you to account on the goals that you've set as well.
No, absolutely. I'm really keen. I'm really pleased that you use that word actually in terms of goals, because I think that's a really big one, isn't it? For coaching, that's a really big one for business, and that's a really big one for team. Throughout doing the show, I think a big buzzword is goals, but I think what we haven't really spoken about is how to set those goals, because I think that society will teach us we must have the biggest recruitment business or the biggest coaching business or the biggest radio station, but actually it's not necessarily always the right thing for the team or the individual. So how do you go about setting goals and really understanding that those goals aren't just plucked out of the air, that actually they're really strategic, and if we're going back to the aspirations words, that they align with the aspiration of the founder, but also of the team around them?
Yeah, so lots of different parts of that, but starting with the kind of goals themselves, I have a lot of owners who are allergic to the word growth because they perhaps sat in with another coach, or maybe they've been to a business breakfast or something along those lines where everyone is talking about scaling and growing and growing your team and more clients. And a lot of the people that I work with actually don't want that. They want a business that gives them the lifestyle they want, gives them the time that they want, but allows them to do something they love. And it still might mean that actually we want to increase profits, we want to increase the number of clients, but that doesn't mean we have to grow to a scale that almost is unwieldy for them, or something that they're really not connected to. So again, comes back to that why. Why are you setting these goals? So interrogating that. The next step in that is, okay, so how are all the different ways we're going to be able to measure this stuff? Because we've all heard of SMART goals, but these goals have to be really specific. We have to be really clear on why we're doing it, how are we going to measure it, how are we going to set some time scales around it? So getting a bit more forensic in the goal itself. And then the big juicy part of it for me is there's no point whacking those up on a slide at your team meeting and going, here we go, here's the goals of the business, but not having anything underneath that that connects any of your teams into those. So this comes back to communication. It comes back to regularly talking about these goals so that the people in the teams, any of their objectives should be connected into the main goal of the business. Now, One thing I think I feel a lot of frustration from business owners is that they almost at times feel like their team don't care about the business as much as they do. They're looking for that accountability, and that could be a really challenging one because it's your baby and you're trying to get a whole team of people aligned and pulling in the same direction. But actually, if we are listening to what people are wanting to achieve personally, what motivates them, that trust piece, opening up those conversations, opening up those kind of what do we want to protect, what do we want to build, and connecting that and showing how those contributions add up to the sum of the whole parts of what the business is trying to achieve, people are going to self-motivate. They're going to want to feel because it drives their objectives forward, but they are also seeing that their contribution adds up to something bigger as well. That comes down to communicating regularly and also about making sure that people's contributions to those are really recognized as well.
No, absolutely. Really, really fascinating. And Gemma, how do you balance coaching with a leader and a team? Because I know that a lot of really successful businesses have very successfully had team coaches and business coaches, and sometimes it's the same person, sometimes it's not. How do you balance that?
It's a real This probably comes into some of those times when not to coach or when not to get a coach. If you are looking for somebody to come in to fix your team or to give them feedback that you haven't been perhaps brave enough to have those conversations, you think a coach can come in and then just have it. I would say stay well clear, right? Because I only work with owners and leaders who have got some form of management program structure within place. Doesn't matter if the business has only got four people, but are they having regular one-to-ones? Are they having appraisals where their performance is effectively managed? Are those conversations happening? They don't have to be perfect, but they just have to have a structure in place. Because if I'm brought in to navigate some of those conversations, I am going to fail miserably because the team will see me as the coach of the business owner leader and almost like the messenger. And the owner is going to kind of want me to be fixing the team and wanting to find out what's going on with the individuals. So, my role as a coach, I have a big word in coaching for me is contracting. And it's sort of almost the unsexy part of coaching that no one really talks about. But contracting for me is about being really clear about how I'm showing up for the business leader and how I'm showing up for the members of the team. So, part of that is confidentiality. Part of it is being very clear when I'm going to feedback, what I'm going to feedback. So anyone who works with me on an individual basis, which might be sponsored by the leader or the owner or the company itself, gets a very clear view of what my role is, how I support these people, and how I support them in those individual sessions. Ultimately, I'm a pretty straight shooter and I will feedback what my observations, my views on whether those coaching sessions are working or whether there's things that need to move and change, but it will all be with positive intent in helping the individuals and helping the business.
Absolutely. We are coming to the final stint of the show. I can't believe I feel like I've interrogated you, Gemma, but you've got so much great content out. Thank you. But as a final note, one of the things I'd love to li leave our listeners with at home is just a lasting top tip. And it could be something that we've covered already, or it could be something that I've not asked you that you think would be really good just to add a closing tip. But under the umbrella of the topic, what would be your ending tip?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the biggest mistakes that I made earlier in my leadership was trying to almost emulate or be a leader that I thought that the business needed or that I felt was sort of fitted the image of what a leader should be. And perhaps in my earlier days, I didn't embrace some of the softer side of my leadership. So I would say the first thing to do when you're thinking about either growing a team, building a team, or just wanting to lead. I don't want to use the word authentically too much because it's a bit overused, but I really think people should just lean into where are my strengths? What kind of leader do I want to be? What's my leadership legacy?
Amazing. No, great advice. Great advice. And what a great way to end the show. So thank you so much, Gemma, for your time and your contribution to the discussion. It's been amazing.
Thank you very much.
So if you are just tuning in, please do check out Gemma online, Gemma Cubitt of Avenue Coaching. Head over to her website. She's got some really great content on there, and I definitely recommend a conversation. But yes, as I said, that is the end of the show. We are going to be back next week with some brand new guests talking about a topic, again, as always, that will impact on local business. So be sure to listen in to that. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio every Sunday at 11 a.m. You can also listen to the show on a podcast version on every major podcast platform, I'm losing my words, which is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video version, if you can see my lovely guests, which is released on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.